Lodge and Hopewell Gardens. Do all the things you wanted to do all summer, all day, all night. Winter, spring, summer, fall. Call 1-800-441-4410 for reservations at Pocono Gardens and beautiful Mount Airy Lodge.
Hello and welcome to FW Presents, the anthology show for the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly, and this is another installment of Mountain Comics, where I look back at the comics I bought while on vacation in the Pocono Mountains of Pennsylvania in the 1970s and 80s with my family. Joining me in the cabin this week is podcaster and friend of the network, Greg Arujo. Hi, Greg.
Hey, before we get started, I'm going to have you say a special incantation so that way I can prove that you are who you say you are.
Lay it on me. I'll do it. I'm confident in my humanity here.
All right. Well, I'll take your word for it for now.
For now, yes. You never know what could happen. Yes, the book we're here to talk about is Marvel Team-Up number 111, starring Spider-Man, of course, and Devil Slayer. Obviously, Marvel wasn't that worried about selling the book terribly that month. But we'll get into the whys and wherefores of how this team-up came about. It went on sale August 18th, 1981, just a mere 2 days after my birthday. I would have turned 10. I remember where I bought this. I bought this at the same newsstand that I bought the Captain America Meets Baron Blood paperback that I mentioned in the 2 episodes ago with Dirk William Crabbe at one of the stores that I frequented the most. And before we get to the book specifically, Greg, I want to ask you, like, Marvel Team-Up, growing up, was this a title that you bought all the time, irregularly? What was your sort of fandom with this?
I would pick it up whenever I could find it, given, you know, the intricacies of the spinner rack back in the day. But it was always kind of a good, solid comic, because not only was I getting Spider-Man, who I really, really liked at the time, and still do, but it would offer the opportunity for me to be introduced to various characters that I might not necessarily pick up. I mean, thinking about it, I probably was introduced to a good chunk of Marvel characters through this title. I mean, for example, probably the first Daredevil story I ever read was a team-up with Daredevil.
Interesting. Yeah, I could say virtually the same thing. I mean, I grew up with being subject to the whims of newsstand distribution, and I just didn't see Marvel Team-Up consistently. It's a Spider-Man title. I'm sure it was stocked more than, say, Sergeant Fury and his Howling Commandos or whatever, but it just wasn't a book that I saw all the time, and so therefore, yeah, I didn't buy it regularly, but of course, when I was on vacation, you know, I was a little more, I don't want to say desperate, that's kind of a negative thing, but I mean, I was reading more comics. You know, I had more money to spend and I was buying more. So I would do that. And like you, you know, this was an introduction to other characters. I'm sure I was reading Defenders at this point. That was always one of my favorite titles.
Oh, yeah.
So Devil Slayer I would have been familiar with. But yeah, like you, I was like, you know, like, oh, Spider-Man and whatever character appeared. I was like, really? This guy, you know, Dazzler? Okay, let me give that a shot. So this was definitely one of those kinds of books. And I remember the cover. It's by Herb Trimpe. And I'm not sure about the anchor. The inside anchor is Mike Esposito, so we can maybe assume it's the same. The cover is gangbusters crazy. Because
yeah.
you've got Spider-Man on this giant statue with 6 arms. There's a giant, like, snake head. There's some sort of bowl that it's holding, maybe for, like, blood or something. And then you've got Devil Slayer with his giant axe at the bottom. And then on the left and right, you've got the heads of the Defenders. And it says, trapped in the temple of the Spider God. I mean, this just looks nuts.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of, like, the Justice League of America titles that happened at about that time, with the floating heads on mm-hmm. either side of the cover.
Yeah,
I kind of wish those heads weren't there, because I like the centerpiece of the cover a lot more than just these heads. And you know, granted, this cover also has the infamous Win a Columbia 10-speed racer bike on it. So the available space was obviously limited because the title and everything is pushed down a good, what, inch or so?
I know. I hated those things. I really hate. And, of course, when comics were stacked on a newsstand rack, I don't know about you, but, like, a lot of the stores that I would buy them at, and this particular store up in the Poconos had them like this, the racks were vertical, not horizontal. So you had two books across, the rack was 2 books across and like 15 down. So of course, when you stocked them, you only saw the top third of any given cover. So during these months, basically all you saw were Win a Columbia 10-speed Formula 10 racer. You had no idea what comic it was because they all looked the same. You'd keep pulling it up and going, oh, all right, Rom the Space Knight. Okay. Oh, Sergeant Fury. Okay. Because, you know, it was the stupid 10-speed Formula 10 racer ad.
Well, I hope somebody won it.
Somebody had to. Somebody's got to find that kid and interview him because he's a legend in comic book history. This is a fun book. I said the inside story is called Of Spiders and Serpents, written by J.M. DeMatteis. Of course, that's one of my favorite writers. Drawn by Herb Trimpe and Mike Esposito. While out on patrol, Spider-Man comes across some jewel thieves and makes quick work of them. Suddenly, he feels like his stomach is on fire. Surrounded in a swirl of smoke, he is shocked to see his Uncle Ben. Ben tells Spidey that he has died and that he will be led to the afterlife. I don't know, what a hell of an opening for a comic book. However, before Spider-Man can go with a man who appears to be his uncle, Devil Slayer appears and strikes Uncle Ben dead again. Spider-Man is about to attack Devil Slayer until it's pointed out that this Uncle Ben is really a serpent-like creature. Spider-Man then aids Devil Slayer in fighting off the other dead souls until they retreat. Teleporting Spider-Man to his apartment, Devil Slayer has him read off a card. It has the magic incantation, Ka Nama Ka Lajarama. There, see, I'm human, Greg.
All right. It's all good.
Yeah. I don't know about you. You haven't said it. And he explains it is the one phrase that the Serpent Men can never say. And Spidey's ability to recite the words proves that he really is Spider-Man and not an imposter. Devil Slayer explains that these Serpent Men are an ancient race of animal people that existed centuries ago who battled the ancient barbarian Kull. There's a callback you wouldn't expect. Spider-Man's spider sense continues to go wild. Devil Slayer explains that a cult of Serpent Men still exists today and that they seek to use Spider-Man as their pawn to take over the world. When Spider-Man questions him as to why his spider sense is going, while Devil Slayer explains that it is humanity's genetic memory of the Serpent Men calling out the Spider-Man to defend himself. He goes on to explain that the Serpent Men seek to kill Spider-Man because of a prophecy that states that they would be defeated by a Spider-Man. In order to complete their ritual, they would require a sacrifice, and as such, have captured the Defenders, prompting Devil Slayer to speak Spider-Man out. I don't know about you, not to stop the story, but I'd be pretty scared of any group that can capture the Defenders. Like that's impressive.
No, yeah, that's no short order. I mean, between Doctor Strange, the Hulk, and Sub-Mariner.
Yeah, I'd be like, oh my God, should we call them the Avengers at this point? I think you need a little more than me here.
Maybe I can buy Gargoyle.
Yeah, right. Nighthawk. Not that hard, but the rest of them, probably. Needing to obtain an ancient lizard statue, Devil Slayer teleports himself and Spider-Man to China, where they begin seeking out the Temple of the Spider. Spider-Man becomes suspicious of Devil Slayer when he is heavy-handed with an old villager to get the location of the temple. More on that scene in a moment. When they are attacked by the Spider People. Spider-Man is further disturbed when he witnesses Devil Slayer's savage behavior when fighting off the creature, making him suspicious of his would-be partner. Nonetheless, Spider-Man jumps over a pit of a statue of Ohm, where he collects it. With the statue in their possession, Devil Slayer teleports them back to the sewers of New York. It had to be the sewers. There they came across what appears to be the Defenders, who claim that they defeated the Serpent Men. Spider-Man is asked to hand over the statue to Doctor Strange, finally deciding to heed the warnings from his spider sense. Spider-Man recites the phrase, Ka Nama Ka Lajarama, revealing the Defenders, including Devil Slayer, to be Serpent Men in disguise. Spider-Man then realizes that he has been duped into retrieving the statue all along. Seeing the Defenders held in stasis in a device above them, Spider-Man tries to fight off the army of Serpent Men. Finding himself outnumbered and realizing they seek to claim the statue, Spider-Man smashes it on the floor. A liquid issues forth that burns all the Serpent Men in proximity. As they curse him for ruining their one hope for taking over the world again, the remaining Serpent Men charge at the wall crawler. Although he is outnumbered, Spider-Man makes a web ball and uses it to smash the device, keeping the Defenders captive. The real Defenders then make short work of the Serpent Men, Doctor Strange and Clea banishing them off to Limbo and then freeing their human slaves from their control. With the battle over, Devil Slayer and the Hulk commend Spider-Man on a job well done. That sounds like the Hulk. When suddenly Spider-Man collapses. Awakening in Doctor Strange's Sanctum Sanctorum, Spider-Man is told that during the fight, he was bitten by one of the Serpent Men, and if they do not act quickly, he will die before the day is through. To be continued!
I really hope he survives.
I hope so. Otherwise, they have to cancel all these titles, and those later movies make no sense. So, all right, Greg, what do you think of it? I mean, you asked to do this one, so I'm going to assume you really like this story.
I like it. My feeling about it is kind of twofold. When I first read it relatively recently, my first impression was like, wait a second. I feel like I'm ripped off, and there was actually no team-up here. So it asks the question, when is a Marvel issue of Marvel team-up not a team-up? Because the Devil Slayer he's been with through most of the issue wasn't the real Devil Slayer. But more I thought about it, well, you know, DeMatteis plays fair. There's no, we're never given the point of view of Devil Slayer. And you don't get any, you know, internal monologues. He's there. He really tells the truth for the most part. So then upon that, it's like, you know what? This was incredibly well crafted.
Oh, it's amazing. I mean, it's remarkable. Like, how many ideas DeMatteis crams into, like, 21 mm-hmm. pages? This ancient race of lizard people. We haven't heard about them. The defenders have been fighting them. Devil Slayer's been tracking them. The whole opening with Uncle Ben is crazy. Like, it's, like, I mean, this was just one comic book. And look how much story I had to read off to recite it all. I mean, you definitely got your 50 cents worth.
Oh, yeah, definitely. This would definitely be 6 issues, definitely. I mean, you're going from New York to Japan, back to the sewers of New York, and then from there, it's going to go wherever it's going to go next issue with, I guess, King Cole.
Right, on top of it, we get a nice cliffhanger ending, which I really like. And yeah, it manages to work in King Cole, for Pete's sake. Talk about like a random reference. I mean, it's strange. But you're right, yeah, you're right. It is, DeMatteis doesn't cheat by making us think for one moment, by tipping off that this is really Devil Slayer. I mean, you don't know until the end, but you're right. We don't get any thought balloons that would be a ripoff. No, we're seeing him completely through Spider-Man's eyes, which is, of course, the way it has to be.
And plus with that, I think this only works because it is Devil Slayer, this story, because I think the reader would feel gypped if it turned out to be, like, the Hulk or Clea or one of the other characters in which we're, you know, much more familiar with. I mean, Devil Slayer, this is, like, his third or fourth appearance since he was introduced back in like 75.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not very familiar. You're in the previous episodes, he's more or less in character. I mean, he does kind of lose his cool in that one bit when he's hacking away at that spider demon with the axe, which is my favorite part of the entire comic.
Yeah, I mean, he's I think it's from what I remember of him when he was in the Defenders, because of course that's where DeMatteis had him. He was always kind of a jackass, like just like real violent, real. So, yeah, it seems in character that he's just this kind of stern guy. And, of course, that's a nice contrast to Spider-Man, who is, despite facing, you know, this really dangerous serpent cult, is still kind of being Spider-Man, you know. My favorite sequence, actually, in this book is when they get to Japan and they meet the old man and they want to find out, you know, where to go. And the old man says, the Temple of the Spider? No, it is unholy. Dark forces lurk there. You must not even ask. And Devil Slayer smacks him across the face, basically saying, give me the information. And then Spider-Man interrupts and says, back off, buddy. And he says, let me talk to the old man. And then there's this nice panel with a little bit of narration where it says, whether it is due to the aged monk's fresh-born fear of Spider-Man's gentler, placating manner, it is not clear, but in a matter of minutes, the desired information is produced. The path to the Temple of the Spider made clear. And this is one of those things that, this is what tips it off, if I didn't know already, that this was written by J.M. DeMatteis. Because, you know, other than, like I say, Kraven's Last Hunt, which was like kind of atypical for him, DeMatteis's story style of writing was always kind of genteel, even though he was writing, of course, mostly superhero action. And I think that comes through. And this is such a DeMatteis moment where it's like Spider-Man's like, no, we don't have to beat the guy up to get information. He's not a bad guy. Let me just talk to him. And it works. I love that he took the time in this comic to give that beat to Spider-Man.
And to take it even a little bit further, I mean, this whole issue kind of speaks to the inherent goodness of Peter Parker's Spider-Man. I mean, the Devil Slayer comes out of nowhere, and you know, Spider-Man doesn't know who he is, but he trusts him because he thinks that his friends are, the Defenders are in trouble. So without, you know, a second thought, it's not like he's poisoned and he needs a cure. He's doing it out of the pure goodness that's within him.
Yeah, it's said DeMatteis had a real handle on Spider-Man. I mean, he had a handle on virtually every character he ever wrote, but in particular, Spider-Man. I love that detail. I just think it's such a nice thing for him to put in. Artwork-wise, what did you think of the artwork by Herb Trimpe? He's somebody who, I'll admit, I was outside of the Hulk, his run on the Hulk, which was great, I was never the biggest fan of his. To me, his stuff was always a little bit on the stiff side. That said, there's some moments in here, and I'll point them out, that I think are really nice looking.
I generally, I was introduced to him through The Incredible Hulk as well. He was probably the first Incredible Hulk artist that I had encountered. So he's always kind of, at that point, he's kind of imprinted. But I've never been a huge fan of his work. Like you said, it's a little stiff. It's just kind of what I think of when it comes to 70s, early 80s Marvel comics, just that kind of style. It would pop up from time to time, whether or not it was in an issue of Godzilla, Shogun Warriors, or something like that. It was serviceable. And in this issue, I think for the most part, it's pretty good. There's some parts about it that feel a little clunky, like the way that the serpent creatures look like and the Spider-Man, the spider demons look like. They look like men in masks more than anything else.
I can picture this being made in the 1950s. You know, it was like on a double feature with the Mole People or something like that. My favorite part, actually, of Trimpey's artwork is page 10, where Spider-Man and Devil Slayer have reached the temple, and there is a cutaway. The top two panels are them walking to the cavern, and then there's a cutaway of the cavern, and it's the panels in the shape of the cavern, of the mountain. And we see all the wrecked statues and all the ruins. And, like, that's actually a really nice effect. I think that's a very effective way of conveying that.
It flows really well going from the two upper panels to the lower one. Yeah,
right.
It's really quite good.
Yeah, and on page 6 too, when Devil Slayer is in the apartment and he's talking to Spider-Man and he says, "And you, Spider-Man, are the one of the beings that need them in their conquest." Spider-Man's body language is great. He's got his one arm and his elbow on his other hand, and he's just like, "Huh, me?" Like he looks totally relaxed. I love that bit.
As I said on page 12, I love it when the Devil Slayer is just going to town on the spider demon. Die.
Yeah, he's like hacking the body in half, even though the guy's already dead. And then we see there's that very narrow panel where Spider-Man is like, "Lord, he's sicker than I thought." And we see a close-up of Devil Slayer, and his teeth are gritted, and he's sweating. And he's and you're like, "Dude, all right, relax. It's okay, cool." Yeah, this is a really fun book. I like the Defenders. I like the idea that Spider-Man almost falls for it, but the Defenders, the fake Defenders, mm-hmm. are just a little too eager to get the Spider-Head. I like the way that he draws all the hands. You see Valkyrie, and I believe that is Submariner's hand, because we see there's like a bracelet. I believe that's Namor. And Doctor Strange, they're all reaching really hard to get the Serpent Head. And you can tell it's just like a little, like, okay, guys, calm down. And that's what tips Spider-Man's Spider-Sense off, which I thought was a great touch.
It's kind of amazing that the plan got as far as it did. I mean, when you stop to think about it, it makes, like, no sense at all. They go and then they set up a scenario in which these cultists attack him, and they sacrifice some of the numbers so the fake Devil Slayer will kill some of them to convince Spider-Man to go rescue them. He gives him the card with the magic word, and that allows him to reveal that the Defenders at the end of the issue who want the statuette are not exactly correct. So they set up the seeds of their own downfall.
Yeah, well, nobody said the Serpent Men were bright in particular. I mean, I would argue that if you've managed to capture the Defenders and you can keep them in stasis, like, I would just lay low for a while. I'd be like, "Guys, we're pretty good." I mean, we see that giant panel of them. They've managed to capture the Hulk. No one's able to do that. You've got Doctor Strange, Clay, as you mentioned. You know, name anybody that can capture Doctor Strange, Namor, and Hulk. They're a pretty powerful team. And on top of it, they've got Valkyrie and Clea and Devil Slayer and Gargoyles. Like, you guys are doing really well. You guys are a pretty impressive race of evil demons.
Oh, yeah, definitely. All in all, yeah, as you said, this is a fun little issue. It kind of falls into You Have Mountain Comics. For me, these types of things are like lazy Sunday afternoon comics. It's solid storytelling, nothing super spectacular. It's not a home run, but it's something that's an enjoyable read that you would have between loads of laundry on a Sunday afternoon.
Oh, yeah. Now, this was exactly the kind of thing I wanted to read when I was sitting on the porch looking out over the lake. I love when the Defenders get freed. Hulk has that little balloon. He goes, "Hulk is free. Thanks, Hulk. Thanks for stating what we already know." And the sound effect is foom, which I have to think was, maybe a slight nod to something. The letterer in this is Diana Albers, so we'll never know if Miss Albers decided to throw that as a reference to Marvel. And then finally, I like Hulk saying, "Yes, Bugman did good." I love that. It's like, his name is Spider-Man. You know that. You've teamed up with him many times, Hulk. Come on. And then finally, Spider-Man faints dead away. And then you got the last panel of him drinking the hot tea that Wong gives him. I wonder, how's he going to drink it? I guess he's going to pull the top part of his mask off. But then he drops it when Doctor Strange reveals that oh my God, you're dying from the serpent bite. And it leads to a part two, which was pretty unusual. Usually these team-up books were one and dones, but this one extends into part two. And I went and looked it up. I never bought part two because, again, like we talked about with newsstand distribution, I never saw it. But part two is Spider-Man and King Carl, which is like, again, who would ever thought that team-up would ever happen?
Oh, yeah. Those are the types of team-ups I really kind of liked, just the King Carl. I don't think I've ever read that one. I don't remember. I looked at the cover and it didn't spark any memories. But that was kind of the fun part of these types of this series, is team-up with Spider-Man and the Human Torch is just another team-up with Spider-Man and the Human Torch. But when you get somebody who's kind of a lower-tier hero, it was always, you knew that it was going to be a great issue, like whether or not he was teaming up with Devil Slayer or Wood God or Red Sonja.
Right. Right, they're not ready for primetime players.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And I kind of miss that in today's comics. I get it that, you know, obviously your sales are going to be up and down depending upon who your co-star is on it, but I think it just widens the bench beyond just another Wolverine appearance.
Right, and it gives one of the lesser characters a chance to shine, and who knows, maybe maybe when you pair somebody up with Spider-Man, they look really impressive. You know,
yeah.
I mean, these are all these characters that are owned now by Disney, and at this point, I think they could convert any of these books and any of these characters into superheroes. But you're right, everybody can get a chance, and like, you know, why not? Why not give Devil Slayer a turn in the barrel? I mean, if it doesn't sell that well, no big deal. Move on to the next thing, and you can always do Wolverine or the X-Men, you know, and boost sales again. But let's try it. Let's see if we can, again, we can make Dazzler work as a team-up character.
And you know, Devil Slayer, I mean, granted, he's a second-tier wannabe Doctor Strange, but still, you know, eventually, you know, his day, I'm sure, will shine.
Yeah, it's a guy with a sword. He's got a great name, Devil Slayer. That's a cool name.
Got a nifty cape. I mean, sure, he came from Atlas Comics originally and had his serial numbers filed off. But
I didn't even think about that, but you're right. Yeah, he pretty much is. He can teleport, you know. He's got lots of cool stuff. So before we sign off and finish off with this book, which is, again, it's a lot of fun. It's one of my favorite of the Mountain Comics. I reached out to James DeMatteis because, of course, he's been on this show, and he's been a good friend to me for all these years. And I'm like, again, which is, I still can't believe, like, you know, I read this comic when I was 10, and I get to like talk to the guy that wrote it, which is nuts. But I reached out to James and I asked him a couple of questions about this comic book because I was curious about some of the where's and the hows and whys of how it got produced. So I asked him, how did you land team-up book gigs? Did you pitch the editor, or were you asked? If the latter, were the guest stars pre-selected? You were writing Defenders at the time. It made sense to have you write an issue where they appear. And this is what JM said. He said, I got the gig because the editor, Tom DeFalco, asked me to take it on. It's possible my first story was a one-off assignment. Tom liked it and asked me to stay on, but honestly, it's been so long ago, I don't remember. The guest stars were my own choice. With editorial input, of course, but I was given pretty free rein to pick and choose. So this was JM picked Devil Slayer, and Marvel went with it.
Well, you know, at this time in Defenders, to be fair, he was kind of in a mini arc with Devil Slayer that kind of spanned like three or four separate issues, like issue, I think, in 97, 101, which came out the same month as this issue,
yes.
and 104 and 111. 10, something along those lines, where it just kind of has a nice little arc, wraps up Devil Slayer. I read an interview in for prep for this, and I think his philosophy with the Defenders was that he wanted to use kind of the lesser lights because you could use them and not necessarily worry about stepping on somebody's toes.
Sure.
And I feel like you can't do anything monumental necessarily with Wolverine or Human Torch because obviously they've got other main titles to be in, but that's the reason. I feel like some of the guests that he chose for this run kind of fall into that category. He's got a really good issue coming up, you know, a couple issues after this with like the Falcon. They're mm-hmm. just all good, solid storytelling with characters that, as you said, not quite ready for prime time at the time.
Yeah, he didn't have to check with the King Carl editor to be able to use King Carl in the next issue.
I know.
Safely able to use King Carl.
I heard that guy could be kind of tough. So.
Maybe. Oh, I used to like that comic a lot. Anyway, I continued on with JM, and I asked him, the story is a two-parter, which is a bit unusual for a team-up title. Again, your idea or Marvel's? And he said it was his. So, again, he decided to make it a two-parter. Again, he was. It's interesting to me because in other episodes of the Fire and Water podcast that Shag and I have done, where we've talked about issues, of DC Comics Presents, it sounds like those writers were not given free rein to pick and choose the team ups. That was Julius Schwartz. Julius Schwartz decided, you know, this month Superman's going to team up with, you know, Man-Bat. I'm going to find somebody to write that, as opposed to going to the writer and saying, hey, do you have any ideas? Who do you want to put in the book? So Marvel's was much more DC's was much more top down. And Marvel's was like, hey, you know, pick somebody you want to write. So I'm like, okay, that's fun. And then the one thing I added, and I said, I love the bit where Spider-Man pushes Devil Slayer aside to get info from the old Mountain Man using kindness instead of slapping the guy around, which was what Devil Slayer wanted to do. You social justice warrior, you. And JMD said, I have very little memory of the actual story aside from the fact that it exists, so I'll take your word for it. So, yeah, I said, I think this is a really terrific comic. It's sort of a quintessential Mountain comic in that it's not something I would have bought when I was home, even if I maybe had seen it, because I would have been like, maybe Devil Slayer, really?
Yeah.
Although I like Defenders, I did buy that book, but man, I loved it, and it was fun to go back and reread it. And in this book's letter column, it ends with the editor saying, "In the meantime, what did you think of this issue?" Well, I really liked it. I thought it was great. So this is a real winner, Marvel team up.
Yeah, I would second that opinion. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, it's a good book. Really fun title. So I think that's going to do it for this issue of Marvel Team Up. Maybe for some other show, we'll have to do Marvel Team Up 112 to see where the story goes, because I want to see if Spider-Man survives and have
him next
to work. Fingers crossed. How they work King Cole into it. So, Greg, where can people find you on the internet?
Well, you can find me on Twitter at GRidge01, and you can also hear me discuss with my podcasting partner, Sean Ross, on the Marvel Secret Wars and Beyond podcast. I'm not certain when this episode's going to drop, but we're like on issue 5 or 6.
That is a crazy endeavor you guys are on to chronicle.
It's a nice change of pace to cover a good comic.
There you go. And I want to publicly thank Greg. As anybody knows that follows him on Twitter, and you should, he posts a ton of comic book ads. Like, that is one of your little corners that you sort of claimed for yourself. And there's been a couple of projects where I've needed a particular ad, and I can't find it because it's so generic. Like, it's like, you know, what was this Marvel X-Men ad with the Iceman dressed as Snowman, and there's like the X-Men on the left hand, and there's the new X-Men on the right. And I'm like, hey, Greg, can you tell me this ad? And like, with 2 seconds later, you'll send it to me. You have a savant like ability to remember what ads I'm talking about, and I appreciate that, all the help you've given me.
It was just one of those things that everybody was posting different things, and I was just trying to find my niche, and nobody was posting ads at that time. And I thought, you know what? I think, you know, those house ads are just as much a piece of art as the covers of the actual comic. And
true.
I felt like it was worth sharing with everybody, and you can find it. There's a handy hashtag comic book ads, so you guys can take a look and you know, just kind of flip through that. I will admit I've been a little lax lately, because after a certain while, because I'm at the benefit of discount bins for the most part, if I'm not reading digitally, because those don't have any ads at all. But there's I think I've reached a certain point in discount bins in which somebody dumped all their books from like a certain period, so the ads are starting to, you know, repeat themselves.
Right, sure.
So I've been, whenever I find something new or noteworthy, yeah, I definitely try to put it up as soon as I can.
Oh, it's great. I said, I really appreciate all the help you've given me, because I've tried to Google some stuff, and I don't have, like, Superman ad 1970. Like, how do you do that? It's so generic, but you're always able to pull it out for me, so I appreciate it. And we'll have the link in the show notes to your Twitter feed.
And my wife will find the file on the computer and is like, why do you have all these ads on your machine?
I'm performing a public service, honey. Come on. All these other, what would these nerds do without me if I didn't have all these ads already scanned? So anyway, well, Greg, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it. Thanks, everybody. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Of course, you can find back episodes of the show on our network site, which is fireandwaterpodcast.com. And this is part of the FW Presents anthology show. So we have a bunch of fun series within that blanket show. And of course, just a couple of weeks ago, we released the Fire and Water Sampler, which has a special original sample of Mountain Comics called Mountain Songs. You can find that on the Fire and Water Sampler if you haven't listened to all 4 hours of it yet. You'll get to it eventually. So that's going to do it. Thanks, everybody, for listening, and we will see you later. In the meantime, Greg, down the road, there is a candy store. Do you want to go down there and pick up some candy and some licorice, and we'll come back and read comics?
Sounds like a plan.
All right, excellent. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We will see you later. Bye.
My love, there's only you in my life, the only thing that's right.
My first love, you're every breath that I take, you're every step I make.